Welcome. Today is Thursday, September the 15th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, Hillary Clinton continues to recuperate while her biggest ally campaigns on her behalf.
If you think the future of America is bleak, if you think we're losers, if you think the military is a disaster, if you think it's a good thing to ridicule all those people, if you think it's okay to make unlawful contributions out of your personal family foundation and then attack my foundation, it saves millions of lives in my personal foundation. We have put millions of dollars into it. If you think that's okay. If you think the future of America is bleak, if you...
All right, well, that was a long introduction. A major announcement also on U.S. aid for Israel. And a new movie about the worst man-made disaster in America, all on today's International Edition. It was another day of twists and turns in the race for the White House as Hillary Clinton continues to recover at her home in New York. Her husband, Bill Clinton, spoke at a rally in Las Vegas, Nevada on her behalf. He said his wife is feeling great and should be back on the campaign trail later Thursday. And the former president did manage to take some swipes at Clinton's opponent, Donald Trump.
If you think the future of America is bleak, if you think we're losers, if you think the military is a disaster, if you think it's a good thing to ridicule all those people, if you think it's okay to make unlawful contributions out of your personal family foundation and then attack my foundation, it saves millions of lives in my personal foundation. We have put millions of dollars into it. If you think that's okay, boy, he's your guy.
Well, the doctor in a letter released by the Clinton campaign said the candidate is healthy and fit to serve as president. Trump, meanwhile, told a massive rally in Canton, Ohio, that the room was hot, and he continued to suggest Hillary Clinton wouldn't have the stamina to deal with it.
I don't know, folks. You think Hillary would be able to stand up here for an hour and do this? I don't think so.
Well, hoping to put the issue of her health behind her, Clinton, again, as we said, released an updated review of her physical fitness and details about the recent bout of pneumonia. But newly released polls show several important states with Donald Trump either closing in on Clinton's lead or jumping ahead of her. Let's talk more about that with VOA national correspondent Jim Malone, who's covering the campaign. He's in Morgantown, West Virginia. Jim, Trump seems to be gaining ground.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still seeing a number of national polls that give Hillary Clinton a lead, anywhere from a couple of points to 5 or 6. But I'm also seeing some key state polls that show Trump pulling ahead in places like Ohio and Florida. Those are two of our bigger, what we call battleground states, states with a lot of electoral votes that are very competitive, usually each 4 years in presidential races. And right now, Trump seems to have a mini surge going on. How long it will last, why it's happening, it's not altogether clear. I will say this. I think it's fair to say in the last couple of weeks, Trump has kind of modified his behavior a bit, and we're not getting as many of the outrageous comments as we were earlier. Perhaps his team of campaign advisors, you know, has been able to impress upon him the need to kind of be more disciplined.
It's been said that no one can win the presidency without Ohio. If he wins Ohio, does that mean he wins the presidency?
No, I mean, the tradition there is that no Republican has ever won the presidency without Ohio. John Kennedy was elected president in 1960. He did not win Ohio. So for a Republican, Ohio is a key state. But, you know, the shifting electoral votes and emphasis in recent cycles is helping the Democrats kind of expand their base a bit. Places like Virginia, where I was this week talking to Democrats, and then a place like Colorado, it gives Democrats and Clinton a few more options to put together a coalition to get to the 270 electoral vote total. At the same time, you know, when you see a trend where several states, and I think Nevada's in this category now too, that have shown a little bit of an upswing for Trump, I mean, the Clinton campaign should be concerned about that and should be thinking about how they're going to combat that.
Why do you think this is happening? Do you think this has to do with Clinton's health issues or a gaffe she made calling Trump's supporters or half of Trump's supporters a basket of deplorables? Or what do you think is happening here?
Yeah, I think those were, I think they played in because voters are sort of paying attention. They're monitoring the news coverage somewhat. And I think the trend is this in this campaign. When the campaign is about the bad things that Donald Trump says, he's generally losing. When the campaign is then focused on Hillary Clinton and some of the mistakes she's been making or her email issue or the question of untrustworthiness, that's when she doesn't do as well. I mean, one of the better breakdowns I've seen on this whole race is whoever this race is about at the end is probably going to lose. So you really want it to be the focus on the other person. You want it to be a referendum, if you're in the Clinton camp, on Trump and all his vulnerabilities. And then if you're on the Republican side, eventually you want it to be a referendum on Clinton and whether or not she's trustworthiness. So it's really for Clinton in the issue is trustworthiness. For Trump, I'd say it's temperament.
I know you've been traveling in Virginia and now you're in West Virginia talking to voters. What are you hearing people say?
You know, I'm talking to a number of Democrats who are, you know, very much in Clinton's camp. I think they know she has flaws. They're certainly turned off by Donald Trump. I think their challenge, from what I'm hearing, is making sure they can mobilize Democratic voters to get out in November, to make sure they get out and vote. Now, on the Republican side, the Trump people I've been talking to are very excited about their candidate. They say that their side is energized. They don't see as much of a problem energizing his base of support. The problem for Trump is he still has a number of sort of regular Republicans he has to win over. There's a number of people who are hesitant about him. The negatives about Trump over the months are kind of built in, and it's going to take some more soothing from Trump to win these people over. Now, maybe he's on a track to do that, given, you know, his modified behavior, and maybe he's seeing that in the polls. It's having an impact.
All right. Well, we appreciate your insights. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone, thank you so much. Let's check in now with our social media expert, G. Abby Lee. G, what's been trending online today?
Hi, Lori. The trending topic on Wednesday was a new Librarian of Congress. Carla Hayden made history as the first woman and also the first African-American to head the de facto National Library. The popular hashtags include hashtag Library of Congress and hashtag Hayden is LOC.
History made indeed. Mm-hmm. Tell us what the White House tweeted about it.
Sure, it shared a video clip of Hayden and captioned it, "Today, Dr. Carla Hayden will be sworn in as hashtag Librarian of Congress. Find out why at POTUS nominated her." Now, to that tweet, some people replied it's overdue, but others, for some reason, argued she will remove some important reference to Christianity from the library.
Why would she do that?
I don't know, and I tried to find it on Twitter, but I couldn't really find why they would make those claims. But she is on Twitter if you want to know more about her, and her new account is at LIBN of Congress. Her first tweet reads like this: "Hello, Twitter. I'm Carla Hayden, the 14th Librarian of Congress. Let's explore at Library Congress together." Now, within the first 30 minutes, more than 2,000 people liked that tweet.
And for those people who may not know, the Library of Congress is just a beautiful, beautiful historic building in Washington, D.C.
You know, I've been here for 5 years, only recently went there for the first time. Everyone who visits D.C., any of our listeners who might be visiting in the future, should definitely check that out.
Absolutely. Well, let's check out some tech news. Mm-hmm. Ride-sharing company Uber rolling out self-driving cars in Pittsburgh this week, right?
That's right. And they're already on the road. So the self-driving cars are apparently pretty easy to spot because they have this mound of spinning instruments perched on top. And you can follow updates on how that new venture is going by following City of Pittsburgh and also Uber Pittsburgh accounts. They are at CityPGH and at Uber_PIT. My favorite tweet from the City of Pittsburgh account is a selfie of Mayor Bill Peduto and Carnegie Mellon President Dr. Subra Suresh. Back to you, Lori.
All right. Thanks so much, Gee. I did see the selfie of Mayor Peduto and Dr. Subra in the self-driving car. Thanks so much. Follow her at Gee Abby Lee. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. And by the way, Uber's Vice President of Engineering, Anthony Lewandowski, said that at that self-driving event that riders are going to love it.
Self-driving is core to Uber's mission of, you know, providing reliable transportation everywhere and to everyone. And we do that by looking at how do we get the best technology into the world to drive safely and be able to get a car that is safer than a human.
Well, competitors such as Nissan and Google have invested hundreds of millions of dollars and logged millions of miles test driving autonomous vehicles, but Uber is the first company in the U.S. to make self-driving cars available to the general public. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. With a ceasefire holding, aid deliveries in Syria await security assurances. U.S. officials are on alert for Russian election hacking. South Sudanese authorities close a prominent newspaper. And the Trump Foundation is being investigated for possible impropriety. Find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues now. President Barack Obama welcomed the de facto leader of Myanmar, also known as Burma, Aung San Suu Kyi, to the White House Wednesday. And after their meeting, both leaders spoke to reporters in the Oval Office, where the president made a big announcement.
The United States is now prepared to lift sanctions that we have imposed on Burma for quite some time. It is the right thing to do in order to ensure that the people of Burma see rewards from a new way of doing business and a new government.
Well, speaking alongside Obama, Aung San Suu Kyi thanked him for personally being the first U.S. president to visit Myanmar, also known again as Burma. She also thanked the Congress for putting pressure on Myanmar to restore human rights and pleaded for people to visit and invest in her country.
We think that this time has now come to remove all the sanctions that hurt us economically, because our country is in a position to open up to those who are interested in taking part in our in economic enterprises.
Some human rights leaders say it's too soon to lift sanctions on Myanmar because the government's human rights record has been mixed, particularly with regard to the rights of religious minorities. President Obama also set a goal Wednesday to admit 110,000 refugees into the United States during the 2017 fiscal year, which is about 10,000 more than his initial goal and about 30% higher than this year. White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest said, while the president believes the United States has a responsibility when it comes to bringing in refugees, they are being carefully screened.
It's important for people to remember that individuals who are admitted to the United States under this program have to undergo more rigorous screening and vetting than any other individual that enters the United States. The president places our national security at the top of his priority list.
President Obama will likely formally make the announcement about the refugee plan when he attends a summit on refugees during next week's General Assembly meeting at the United Nations in New York. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA. But Republican, by the way, Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump, who has made immigration a major part of his campaign, was extremely critical of the plan.
We have no idea where they come from, folks. This could be the great Trojan horse, and I don't want to be known in 200 years for having created the Trojan horse with a different name. We don't know where these people come from. We don't know if they have love or hate in their heart, and there's no way to tell. We'll build safe zones. We'll build safe zones. We owe, as you know, $20 trillion, double the debt during the Obama years, double the, did you see this? Double, more than double by the time he gets out. $20 trillion. We will have the Gulf states pay for it. We will lead it, but they will pay for it, and we'll build safe zones, but we can't let these people come into our country. We have enough problems. We have enough problems.
Also making remarks on the Syrian refugee crisis, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon.
The international community must come together in a spirit of shared responsibility for the world's refugees and migrants. More countries must resettle more people who have been forced from their homes.
This is VOA.
News happens around the clock. And VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
Democracy in action. That's what the U.S. presidential election is all about. Who's going to be the new president of the United States come November 8th? Tune in to VOA's coverage of the 2016 presidential election. Reports, expert analysis, and more. Professional, up-to-the-minute coverage that can't be found anywhere else. Right here on VOA.
You're listening to International Edition on VOA. The United States and Israel signed a landmark 10-year military assistance agreement Wednesday. The Memorandum of Understanding promises to provide Israel with a record $38 billion beginning in 2019 and locking in an additional $500 million annually for Israeli missile defense. White House National Security Advisor Susan Rice underscored the ironclad bond relationship between the U.S. and Israel at a signing ceremony Wednesday at the State Department.
This marks a significant increase over our existing funding, and it will ensure that Israel has the support it needs to defend itself by itself and to preserve its qualitative military edge.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, speaking here through an interpreter, said despite tensions between the U.S. and Israel over the past years,
this agreement proves a simple truth. The relations between Israel and the United States are strong and powerful. This doesn't mean that there are not disagreements from time to time, but these are disagreements within the family. They do not impact the great friendship between Israel and the U.S., friendship that is evidenced in this agreement that will help greatly in forging Israel's power in the coming decade.
Well, the agreement concludes many months of negotiations. Meanwhile, former Prime Minister and President Shimon Peres remains hospitalized, suffering from a stroke. Dr. Yitzhak Kreis, director of Sheba Medical Center near Tel Aviv, provided an update on his condition.
After 24 hours of evaluating the ninth president, Mr. Peres, I can say that he is still in a critical condition, stable. But we can see some improvement.
Peres, a Nobel Peace Prize laureate, is 93 years old, and despite suffering a mild heart attack in January, he continued to be very active in public life. He's been in the forefront of Israeli public life for nearly 70 years, serving twice as prime minister, along with extended terms as foreign defense and finance minister. Well, the Alzheimer's Association calls the disease the only disease among the top 10 causes of death in America that cannot be prevented, cured, or even slowed. The gloomy outlook means many people avoid screening tests for dementia. But now a U.S. scientist has documented reversal of early Alzheimer's in a small case study, largely through lifestyle interventions. From Boulder, Colorado, Shelley Schlender reports.
These friends have gathered from around the world to have fun and to be serious about salads and exercise. That's because they want to reduce their risk for a brain-destroying disease known as Alzheimer's.
We all found out that we carried one or two copies of the APOE4 gene, which puts us at higher risk for Alzheimer's.
Susan, who offers only her first name, says her father died from Alzheimer's. During his decline, doctors had little to offer.
So there's a fatalistic attitude with some doctors that once you have it, there's nothing you can do, and you just sort of have to get your affairs in order and expect that you're going to the nursing home next.
Susan discovered she has the APOE4 genetic trait 4 years ago. Determined not to do nothing, she went online and sought other people with her genotype.
A bunch of us banded together and decided to see, can we hack our own health?
One of those hackers is Julie G. Before teaming up with Susan, Julie G. had been anxiously monitoring her increasing senior moments at the not-so-senior age of 49. Then she learned that she has the APOE4 genetic trait.
When I put the symptoms I was having together with my very high risk of developing Alzheimer's disease, I was pretty terrified.
Her fear turned to courage as she helped build an online community named APOE4.info. The health hackers dug into the conflicting studies about healthy brains, then focused in on leafy greens, healthy fats, exercise, and more.
It's been a very exciting journey. My cognition is very much improved now.
Her group's approach is validated by the work of Dale Bredesen of the Buck Institute for Research on Aging. He studies how combining lifestyle changes with other interventions can reverse cognitive decline and has conferred with the APOE4.info group for 2 years. In June, Bredesen added to their optimism when he documented memory improvements for even early Alzheimer's.
This is the first time in history that there's been reversal of cognitive decline in early Alzheimer's disease.
Bredesen calls the APOE4.info group a great example of people who walk the talk, using a variety of ways to help the brain, such as rigorous exercise, good nutrition, and more. Members of the APOE4.info group say the sooner someone starts promoting brain health, the more likely that a genetic risk won't become a destiny.
I can hopefully prevent it, but if not, at least put it off for decades.
Bredesen plans clinical studies to refine his approach for reversing cognitive decline. For VOA News, I'm Shelley Schlender in Boulder.
Well, a new movie takes a more personal look at the worst marine oil spill in U.S. history on board a drilling platform in the Gulf of Mexico. As International Edition's David Byrd tells us, Deepwater Horizon looks at the lives of some of the people killed in the initial explosion as well as the aftermath of the disaster.
In April of 2010, an explosion and fire crippled the oil drilling platform, the Deepwater Horizon, in the Gulf of Mexico. Cement meant to contain the natural gas in the well failed, and the gas shot up the drilling tube and ignited. 11 workers were killed and 17 others injured in the explosion. The rig, which was leased by British Petroleum and operated by Transocean, sank. Then a device called a blowout preventer, which is intended to stop oil from leaking out of the well 1,500-plus meters below, failed. Millions of barrels of oil leaked into the Gulf over the next few weeks. In the film Deepwater Horizon, Mark Wahlberg plays oil rig worker Mike Williams. At the film's premiere at the Toronto Film Festival, Wahlberg said that rebuilding the disaster site in Louisiana during hurricane season was challenging, but worth the effort for the integrity of the film.
But, you know, this is the kind of movie like Lone Survivor where it's not about your own individual experience and you suck it up because, you know, we're paying tribute to the 11 people that lost their lives and all the men and women who were able to survive the Deepwater tragedy. So, you know, when you're aware of those things, it makes it a lot easier.
Actress Kate Hudson plays Mike Williams' wife, Felicia. She says there was added pressure knowing that the real families of the real victims would see the movie.
And so there's this little extra importance that's put on making sure that you get it right. And so I think that was one. And also, I it's nice to be a part of a film that kind of switches it. You know, you got this obviously enormous environmental disaster, but at the same time, you know, we kind of lost sight of the fact that 11 lives were lost, and and it's nice to sort of pay homage to them and their families.
Veteran actor Kurt Russell plays Deepwater manager Jimmy Harrell. Russell says he hadn't known about the number of people killed on the rig until he read the script.
But I had no idea. I had no idea 11 people had died. I didn't see anything on that. I didn't see anything on the oil rig burning. Explosions that you could see from space. I didn't know that there were acts of miraculous heroism that occurred to help people stay alive. And I thought, yeah, where's that? If that story is not as important as the ecological potential disaster.
Director Peter Berg credits his Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist uncle for his passion for depicting real stories. He also directed and produced Wahlberg's 2013 reality-based Lone Survivor.
I've always been a believer that if you can find a real great story and you can get access to those the people who are part of it and the culture that they represent, that to me is where the inspiration comes, and that's where the gold is for me.
Deepwater Horizon also stars Oscar nominee John Malkovich, Maze Runner star Dylan O'Brien, and Jane the Virgin star Gina Rodriguez. The film is rated PG-13 for language and intense disaster sequences. Deepwater Horizon opens in U.S. theaters September 30th. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
I'm James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa. Join me every weekday mornings at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of the show through our listeners' mail segment. Just send your views to daybreakafrica@voanews.com or call us on 202-205-9942. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us anytime at voanews.com. We are glad you could join us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Zubair El Taib. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
For a while, it looked like the 2.5-year-old civil war in South Sudan might finally be over. In August of last year, both Salva Kiir and Riek Machar signed a peace agreement to end the conflict, the terms of which confirmed Salva Kiir as president and returned Riek Machar to government as the first vice president. But just months after Riek Machar returned to South Sudan to resume his vice presidential duties, violence resumed and Machar fled. One of the most heinous aspects of South Sudan's civil war is the forced conscription of child soldiers, children younger than 18, with far too many under the age of 15. According to UNICEF, the United Nations Children's Agency, since South Sudan's civil war began in December 2013, over 16,000 children have been recruited into armed groups on both sides. UNICEF has reported on the recruitment of child soldiers since the July 7th outbreak of violence. Both sides are using various methods, including coercion and blackmail, to force parents to surrender their children to them. The United States is profoundly alarmed by the UNICEF report. Above and beyond our calls for an end to ongoing violence in South Sudan, we insist on an immediate halt to the unlawful recruitment and use of child soldiers by government and opposition forces. Individuals responsible for the unlawful recruitment or use of child soldiers for armed groups or forces may be subject to sanction under U.S. law and may be targeted for U.N. sanctions, said State Department spokesman John Kirby in a written statement. The continued unlawful recruitment and use of children in armed conflict in South Sudan is unacceptable. Eliminating the unlawful recruitment and use of child soldiers for armed groups in South Sudan is a leading priority of the United States. We remain committed to securing accountability for those who recruit and use children as soldiers.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
is for, what's your